This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. With 30 years of practical experience in environmental science and natural resource management, Dr. John Hartig is currently the refuge manager for the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge, which is bringing the natural world back to the waterways and the automobile capital of America. John Hartig spoke with the Cincinnati Zoo's Thane Maynard about these efforts and his book, Bringing Conservation to Cities, Lessons from Building the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge.
Hi, Dr. John Hartig. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Hey, Thane. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure and honor to be with you. Boy, you do some phenomenal work.
Well, thank you. And certainly our listeners are keenly interested in conservation, and I know they'll be interested in your story, which I've read chronicled in your new book, Bringing Conservation to Cities. And of course, many people think of conservation as something that happens far away and in a wilderness area, but of course, we all live in cities. And you've had some big success up in the Detroit area. Tell us a bit.
Yes. You know, when most people think about Detroit, they think of about automobiles, Motown music, the Rust Belt, and even professional sports, but they don't think about conservation. Yet we're the intersection of two major flyways, the Atlantic and Mississippi flyways, and we have over 300 species of birds, and we have over 100 species of fish. We also, being the automobile capital of the United States, you know, we had a lot of pollution. We also were the arsenal of democracy for World War II. So one of the tributaries to the Detroit River caught on fire in 1969. So it's been 40 years, and there's been some dramatic improvement in the Detroit River. But that's not the best part of the story, Thane, for you and me. The best part of the story is the recovery. We now have bald eagles nesting in 30 locations in the watershed. We have peregrine falcons nesting and producing young in downtown Detroit. We have osprey nesting in the lower river for the first time since the 1890s. We have lake sturgeon reproducing the rivers for the first time in 30 years. We have lake whitefish reproducing for the first time in Detroit River since 1916. And the walleye population of the Detroit River was in a crisis state back in the 60s and 70s. Today, we're part of the walleye capital of the world with Lake Erie. So if you add up that, the return of osprey, bald eagles, peregrine falcons, lake sturgeon, lake whitefish, walleye, it's one of the most remarkable ecological recovery stories in North America, and it's because where we started, you know. And out of that has grown an international wildlife refuge.
So this is amazing stuff, just hearing that comeback story, because you're right, people's image of Detroit is it's a huge metropolitan area, a total of 7 million or so people if you take it all in with Windsor, Ontario. And yet here are these species making a comeback. To what do you attribute this remarkable thing that, like you said, in 45 years, bam, here are these species that are back? I assume it must be you cleaned up the water.
Yes, very much so. You know, we've decreased phosphorus loadings to the river by 90%. You know, we've seen the decline of pesticide contamination, everything from DDT to dieldrin in bird, you know, eggs. And we've seen decline in contaminant concentrations in fish, like mercury and PCBs. We have been restoring habitats also. You know, we've lost 90% of the coastal wetland habitat on the Detroit River because of development, because of all these people in industry. And so we've been incrementally building back some habitat, and that's helping some species too. And then trying through that thing to reconnect people to the Detroit River as well.
And I know one of your big pushes that has been successful is the establishment of the International Wildlife Refuge. Again, people imagine that being somewhere out in a wilderness, somewhere very remote, maybe where the animals are safer, where it might even be a multi-use purpose, such as the now famous Mayur Reserve in Oregon. But here's one that's right in the city. Tell a bit about the establishment of your wildlife refuge.
Yeah, back literally in 2000, we brought together a group of 25 people from Windsor, Ontario, Canada, and 25 people who cared about the river from Detroit. And we asked them, what would you like if you could have one thing? And we had people like the Dean of Congress, Congressman John Dingell, and we had Peter Stroh at that time, the CEO of Stroh Breweries and Stroh's Ice Cream. And we had Herb Gray, the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, and they wanted to help. And so we went away for 3 days and wrote a conservation vision for the lower Detroit River ecosystem and called for an international wildlife refuge that would be the only one in North America. So if they gave us the legitimacy of law, we felt everything else could follow. And Congressman John Dingell picked it up and within 1 year had it signed by the President of the United States, and Canada followed suit with some existing legislation, and here we are now building an international wildlife refuge. We manage, own and manage about 5,800 acres for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We partner with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources on another about 8,000 acres. In Canada, we cooperate on about 6,000 acres. So we have over 18,500 acres of land now being managed for conservation and outdoor recreation in a metropolitan area with nearly 7 million people. Our goal, Thane, is to reach 25,000 in the next 10 years.
That's just remarkable. And I think I'm right that in addition to being an author and an adjunct professor, you're the refuge manager.
Yes, I am. So it's just like in for the Cincinnati Zoo, it's important to tell your story. You know, I think it's important to tell our story here and to inspire others to do the same thing in urban areas. You know, the National Wildlife Refuge System is one of the premier land conservation organizations in the world, and we have many wilderness ones, remote ones. And what has we done as the Fish and Wildlife Service over the years to engage people from urban areas? Very little, Thane. So we have a new urban refuges initiative. There are 14 priority urban refuges throughout the country, places like San Diego and Detroit and others, to put a priority on bringing conservation to cities and making nature part of everyday urban life, like what you're doing in Cincinnati. So it's pretty exciting, and that's really important for all of us because, as you and I know, there are 80% of the U.S. citizens and Canadian citizens, for that matter, 80% of them now live in urban areas, and we need to engage them to care for the species that live in their backyard and be an advocate for not only their backyard, but for the rest of these special places throughout the world.
Well, in reading your book, John, you know, it's heartening because, as we had said, Detroit does have a mixed image. You know, the Rust Belt, the Midwest, the hard times. The city itself has had some challenges with the loss of buildings downtown. And yet, this vision of what you're doing is very hopeful for wild species and diversity, but also for the importance of that to the people that live there. But tell a bit, briefly, how in the world you pull that off in a town where, famously, I think money's a little tight in Detroit.
Yes. Well, you know, you have to do a little bit of everything, you know. But once we got the legitimacy of law, you know, we had to work in partnerships. You know the price of land in a major urban area like Cincinnati or Detroit or Chicago or San Diego, it's very expensive. So we have been doing cooperative management agreements with corporations. So let me give you an example. A power company called DTE Energy has a power plant, and they don't use all the land for energy production. And so we now have a cooperative management agreement where we are managing coastal wetlands, 656 acres with DTE Energy for habitat and conservation. We've done that with other places as well. And so we've also received some donations of property, like National Steel Corporation gave us an island in the Detroit River. Ford Motor Company gave us Ford Marsh, 240 acres of coastal wetlands at the mouth of the River Raisin as it enters western Lake Erie. So as people started seeing us as a legitimate player in conservation and the trust factor, it was really important to have trust. They decided to invest in us, and we've used that to build a record of success and to move forward. We are also trying to do some real creative things right in downtown Detroit. There is a Riverwalk, which is one of the largest urban waterfront redevelopment projects in the United States right now. They've taken 6 miles of riverfront, wiped the slate clean, and asked the people, what would you want there? And they said they wanted places that could appreciate fish and wildlife and places to walk and places to see the river. And so we've been able to work with them to soften the shoreline using soft shoreline engineering techniques to make it a place not only for people, but for wildlife. We've built a innovative stormwater retention basin along the shoreline so that the Riverwalk meanders over it and people get a feel for what we're trying to do. We've created a birding spot right on the Detroit River on the Riverwalk where people can come and use spotting scopes and have an interpretive panel and see birds by season, whether it's warblers in the springtime or raptors in the fall or waterfowl in the wintertime. It's pretty amazing. So it's a lot of fun right now to do it, and we have a lot of support because, Thane, if you think about some of these big businesses today, it's, you know, they don't want to just give a job to someone, and those people that they're hiring don't want just the job, but they want a quality of life. So what they do outside of work becomes very important, and if we can provide world-class outdoor recreation and world-class natural resources in their backyard, that's helping businesses attract and retain employees as well.
Absolutely. Now, one last brief question. Walleye capital of the world, is it safe to eat fish out of the Detroit River?
There are still health advisories on certain species and size classes. So the big, you know, walleye still would have some health advisories on them. So the bigger and fatter the fish, the more contaminants that they would biomagnify or bioaccumulate. Some of the leaner fish, like yellow perch, don't have them as well. So since the mercury crisis in 1970, we've seen a 70% decline in mercury contamination. But we still have a ways to go, Thane, and that's the reason that these conservation environmental efforts are so important, is that we've seen some improvement, but we've got a long way to go, and we're going to need everyone to do their part.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. John Hartig, thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Your story is a heartening one, and I know a lot of people in our area drive up I-75 to Detroit, and I'll make sure they learn about your wildlife refuge as well.
And thank you for all you do in the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. It's a real example for all of us.
You bet. Thanks very much. My guest has been Dr. John Hartig, author of the new book, Bringing Conservation to Cities.
The Cincinnati Zoo's Thane Maynard.